Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, and thank you so much for tuning in to this week's Food for Thought, a podcast on a mission to equip you with all the evidence-based advice that you need to live and breathe a healthy lifestyle. I'm Rhiannon Lambert, a registered nutritionist, best-selling author of Renourish, A Simple Way to Eat Well, and founder of Retrition, London's leading private nutrition clinic. In each episode, I'll be joined by special guests, all of whom can be considered authoritative voices in health, so that together we can learn fact from fiction and empower the healthiest and happiest versions of ourselves with trusted expert advice. Please know that bloating is 100% natural and it happens to us all. However, it really can be troubling for many who experience especially painful symptoms, as well as suffering from things like irritable bowel syndrome, otherwise known as IBS. This week's Food for Thought sees registered dietitian and Retrition's very own gut health specialist, Caitlin Colucci, and I delve deep into digestion and explore how we can beat the bloat for good. Hello, Caitlin.
Hi, Ree.
Hello. Nice to have a Retrition dietitian on the podcast today. Thank you so much for joining us. Right, we're talking about bloating today. And I think let's start by the fact that, well, you can answer this. Is there any truth in the claim that you can work out what's wrong with you by simply, I guess, looking at the shape of your stomach?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And thank you so much for inviting me on the podcast to discuss bloating. Bloating is one of the most common gut symptoms that people report to me in clinic. And it's also a topic that really does attract some pretty crazy media stories out there. Mm. But the simple fact is we cannot tell what's going on inside our body just by looking at the outside. But what we can understand and look for really is if our bloating is intermittent, so which is the type that kind of comes and goes over the course of the day, or we can look to see if our bloating is continuous. And that's when there really is no fluctuation over the course of the day and you're constantly bloated. So intermittent bloating tends to be a lot more common, and this is the type that typically can be managed through diet and lifestyle, whereas continuous bloating is much less common. And it is best to have this reviewed by your GP first.
Ah, interesting, of course. And do you find that that's an area that GPs are pretty good at recognising if obviously there is a need to speak to someone like yourself?
They're certainly getting better in terms of guidelines of clinical excellence, in terms of managing IBS. GPs should be aware that they need to rule out possible other causes for bloating, such as things like celiac disease or inflammatory bowel disease, before then referring on even further. But you still would be surprised at how many GPs are just pointing the finger at something as simple as irritable bowel syndrome before checking out anything else first.
And I think IBS now is it's extremely common, isn't it? Actually, I think more so than people perhaps realize, and there's a lot of differences. Let's talk about the digestion. Let's talk about the fact that I guess even there are gender differences, aren't there? Because I read that women in females, that food can spend up to 50 hours in the large intestine compared to 30 hours in males. That's pretty astounding, isn't it?
Yeah, and I mean, we have to look at gut transit time. Now, this really can vary from person to person, can vary between males and females. Gut transit can last anywhere between sort of 24, 48, even up to 72 hours in some people. For women, we tend to have our small intestines tend to be a bit more kind of wiggly back and forth. Also, women tend to have slightly weaker abdominal walls. So when we look at things like bloating in particular, women can be slightly more susceptible.
That's of course something that I guess I hadn't really thought about, actually, the abdominal wall muscle, and it makes perfect sense. I guess it makes sense also to explain, why do we get bloated? Let's start there.
Yeah, now this is quite a big question because, you know, bloating is quite a complex area. It is important to remember, however, that a little bit of bloating is completely normal. So particularly after we've eaten a large meal or maybe a high fiber meal. And actually, bloating can be a really good sign that our gut microbes are doing what they should. But when we look at what bloating is, you know, put very simply, it's the feeling of increased pressure in your intestine that in obviously some people can cause this visible protrusion. But there's no one single cause of bloating, and it is much more complex than pointing the finger at what we're eating.
Many people do, don't they?
Yeah.
I think it's just what you eat.
Yes, absolutely. But when we look at what causes bloating and why we get bloated, there's kind of four main areas we need to think about. So one of which is gas production. Another area is what we call intestinal sensitivity or hypersensitivity. Another area can be gas absorption. And then in a subset of people, we have something called a diaphragm reflex. So I don't know if you want me to expand a little bit more on those kind of four
definitely.
Areas.
Definitely, that's exactly what we want to hear. Thank you.
So when we look at gas production, obviously the built-up pressure inside our intestines can result from how much we've obviously had to eat or drink, but this can also result from the gas produced from our gut microbiota. Mm. When we eat large amounts of fermentable carbohydrates and some types of fiber in particular, so this gas production can build up and causes our intestines to stretch, giving this sensation of bloating. Mm. What's really interesting, though, is that studies have looked at those who suffer from bloating and have actually found that the intestinal gas production is similar to those people who report no bloating whatsoever. Mm. And this is all due to the sensitivity of the intestines. So if you have increased sensitivity, known as visceral hypersensitivity, which is particularly common in people with functional gut disorders like IBS, for example, who are much more likely to feel bloated than those without these functional gut disorders.
Wow.
Yeah. Another area is gas absorption. So, you know, as I've just said, we all produce some gas when we eat food, but some people are more susceptible to bloating depending on the balance between how much gas they produce, but also how efficient your body is at absorbing it. And also the transport of gas through the intestine can sometimes be an issue for some people. And this results in that feeling of kind of uncomfortable, trapped gas.
And that's, I think, something that, yeah, a lot of people report, that kind of painful experience.
Yes, absolutely. And that's when you get the discomfort. And then a final subset of people, in particular, when we look at those with functional gut disorders like IBS, bloating can be made a lot worse due to a reflex of their diaphragm. So, for example, if you're experiencing abdominal pain or discomfort, then the gut will trigger the brain via the gut-brain axis to contract the diaphragm and relax the stomach muscles in an attempt to relieve this uncomfortable feeling. And this can cause quite severe belly protrusion. So this is when many people describe, you know, looking 6 months pregnant or so.
And I think that's a lot of the images that a lot of people tend to see online, which is obviously, let's go into that subject later, the subject of online. And do you think if we do go to the fact that a lot of people jump straight to food, whereas we know from what you've just described, there's a hell of a lot more going on there. Are there certain types of foods and drinks that may trigger these different responses?
Yeah, so despite the complexity of bloating, in many cases it really can be reduced with either simple dietary changes or simple lifestyle changes. Mm. So the first area I always focus on is making sure you're not swallowing excess air from things like chewing gum and carbonated drinks. So I always think if you're suffering from bloating, you certainly don't want to be putting more bubbles into the problem area. Chewing gum in particular and other sugar-free foods actually contain ingredients called polyols, which are known as artificial sweeteners. Things such as mannitol, sorbitol, xylitol, anything that ends in O-L. And these are known to trigger bloating. You have to be careful if you're drinking a lot of fruit juice or a lot of fruit smoothies too quickly in particular or in large portions. Fruit smoothies and fruit juices, they carry what we call a big osmotic load. So you dump this big amount of sort of natural sugar into your gut in one go. And what happens then is your gut draws water into the bowel, which can then trigger this abdominal bloating.
Yeah, it takes everyone back to probably secondary school biology there with osmosis.
Exactly.
That's what I was thinking there. Chewing gum, interestingly, is one of the biggest culprits that we see in the nutrition clinic countless times, I think. And it's ironic, really, because it's meant to be a good habit. Some dentists say, oh, chew some gum after your meal. But actually, it can cause all kinds of problems. And do you think... Sorry, no, go ahead.
Sorry, no, I was just going to say absolutely. And people often think that by chewing gum, they're doing themselves a favour. There's this myth that, you know, chewing gum can help stimulate the gut flow and therefore can help to reduce bloating. But actually, it's these polyols which really are the culprit. When we look at chewing, however, not chewing gum, but when we actually look at chewing our food, if people are eating too quickly or not chewing their food well enough, then this means they can actually swallow more air if they're chewing quickly, talking with their mouth full, but then creating more work for your digestive system to do. And eating quickly again can trigger more bloating.
Right, so that's to do with chewing more air. What were the other factors then to do with the types of foods that you would look at, the things that you'd address in clinic?
So I'd also see if people were having particularly large meals. So if someone suffers from bloating, then I'd suggest eating smaller portions throughout the day and definitely trying not to skip meals, just because if we skip meals, we tend to then overeat or eat a larger portion at our next meal because we are more hungry. I also just make sure that people aren't overdoing it on things like fermented foods. So fermented foods are very popular these days.
Yeah, so popular.
Very hot topic. Things like kefir, sauerkraut, kimchi, or eating, you know, a lot of, if my clients are eating a lot of known gas producing foods, so things like beans, pulses, cauliflower, kind of every day in large quantities, then I suggest just reducing their intake of these slightly because that might be contributing to some of the bloating.
Yeah, no, definitely good advice there. Things that tend to be trendy doesn't necessarily make it good for everyone. I think that's important. As with everything, moderation plays such a key role. Let's talk about the absorption then of food. So how does that impact, I guess, how we feel and how we look? Because there's also lots of things on the internet about, you know, leaky gut and all sorts of conditions that I know that you'll probably have a lot more to say about, Caitlin.
Yeah, absolutely. So leaky gut essentially is referring to the permeability of our gut. Now, when we look at eating foods that might cause leaky gut, well, there's not really such a thing. The evidence isn't quite there, apart from when we look at things like alcohol. So alcohol is a bit of an irritant to the digestive tract, and it can make our gut a little bit more permeable to the foods that we're eating. So therefore make us more sensitive to the foods that we're eating. So if someone has a very high alcohol intake, then they may find themselves being more susceptible to bloating. So I always suggest and recommend people to have a minimum of 2 alcohol-free days a week, and then really trying to stick to below 14 units of alcohol per week.
Good advice. I think alcohol is often forgotten about, isn't it, when it comes to the digestion. It's almost like this free pass that people think, oh, it's just a liquid, it won't impact me.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's really something important to think about. And if, you know, you're drinking alcohol, it's always important to stay hydrated as well. Alcohol works, you know, two ways. It can stimulate the gut muscles, and often people suffer from kind of looser bowel motions and sometimes diarrhea. But then if that is happening, then that can have a knock-on effect and cause dehydration, which then leads to constipation. So yeah, it is really important to try to minimize your intake.
Well, that's the thing. Hydration plays a big role. And we all know that we need to eat more fiber in the UK, or I hope every Food for Thought listener knows by now, because we talk about fiber a hell of a lot. But obviously, it's not that straightforward, is it, for somebody that perhaps is experiencing bloating or IBS, you know, because fibre is a difficult thing to get right, isn't it?
I love to think of fibre as a personal trainer for your digestive tract. That's always how I talk about it with my clients. So if you don't have enough fibre in your diet, then your digestion will suffer. However, if you're obviously suffering from an irritable tummy, then going for roughage and fiber, you know, might feel like you're taking razor blades to your intestines, which is obviously not what you want to do. But that's why it's really important to start and think about what we call soluble fiber. Now, soluble fiber is a type of fiber that works by absorbing water in your digestive system and can form like a gel-like consistency. So it's a lot more soothing and easier on the digestive system. Mm. And so by increasing your intake of soluble fiber from foods such as porridge oats, linseeds or flax seeds, or even things like psyllium husk, which is another type of natural fiber, this can be a really great way to try to start to train your digestive system to working in a particular way again. Because we need to remember that everything from our mouth all the way through to the other end, the exit, the other end of our digestive system, it's a muscle. So we need to train that muscle to function in a particular way, and fiber can help us do that.
Completely. And I think that's what, when we get periods where perhaps you're having diarrhea, it's almost like the muscle is squeezing. Is that correct? Contracting very quickly?
Yes. So contracting very quickly, aggravated. If we're not getting enough fiber of this soluble fiber in our digestive system, then there's nothing to bulk out your stools to help you pass formed stools.
Yeah, and there's a lot of talk on, obviously, about gut health anyway in general, Caitlin, and it can be, I think, a little bit overhyped, because obviously we need a lot more research. It's a very tricky area, I guess, to get to the bottom of, because it's just huge and fascinating. But what is the actual correlation then between gut health, which is a phrase, and I guess in this instance, we're talking about that bacteria we mentioned at the beginning, giving off the excess gases that live down there, and bloating? Is it just those excess gases, or is there more of a communication or dialogue that's happening with that bacteria?
Yeah, so absolutely. You know, when we talk about gut health, we really are referring to the functioning of our entire gastrointestinal tract. So really everything from mouth all the way through to the other end. But the hot topic these days has looked in particular at the gut microbiota, which are the millions and trillions of bacteria which live within our large intestine. And what research is now showing is that this gut microbiota acts almost entirely independently of our brain. Mm-hmm. So they're now calling it our second brain. And so our gut and our brain are in a constant two-way communication with each other via something called the gut-brain axes. And they communicate via the rest and digest nervous system, so the parasympathetic nervous system, and also our fight or flight nervous system, so our sympathetic nervous system.
And which makes what so we much do sense, now, doesn't it? Because when, sorry to interrupt, but I'm just thinking of all those listeners that are thinking, oh, well, when I had an exam, you know, my stomach went to bits, and it literally feels everything, doesn't it? Like emotions.
Exactly. You feel those butterflies in your stomach. You feel nervous. You can feel those emotions in there. So when we do feel stressed, and that's because, you know, our brain is telling us that we are, then our rest and digest nervous system slows down because all the blood rushes to our muscles to get them ready for that fight or flight mode. And then obviously when we're relaxed, blood goes back to our gut to support digestion. So this is why when people are stressed, sometimes they struggle to go to the toilet, they suffer from constipation more. But similarly, people do still suffer from diarrhea when they're stressed. And that's because there's this overactive gut motility going on, or this increased hypersensitivity, which we were talking about earlier.
Which goes to show how individualized any kind of work on your gut should be. I don't think a blanket approach is going to have much of an impact, because we've discussed stress, and I think overall health and stress is immensely linked. We know that. But what about the impact that chronic bloating has on our overall health? Is there is there something that is linked there between overall health and bloating?
So gut health can certainly impact our mental health. So talking about the gut-brain axis, as I said, it's a constant two-way communication. So yes, if we're stressed, that can have an impact on the way our gut functions. But similarly, if we're suffering from gut health issues, then this can send signals to our brain and make us more susceptible to lower mood, mental health problems. So it is really important, and it can be really helpful to get on top of your gut health. This can help not only, you know, make you feel happier and impact your mood in a positive way, but it can also help with things like sleep, your concentration, and just your general day-to-day well-being.
It's not as simple as just saying we'll just go and eat more fiber. I think we really need to discuss the fact that it is the diversity of foods that you can get in your diet, but equally, I guess we should caveat by saying if anybody is experiencing digestive discomfort, they should always perhaps speak to a health professional before suddenly loading up with all this fiber. Is that correct?
Yes, because sometimes any sudden increase in fiber without appropriate fluid and hydration, you can actually then see a worsening in your symptoms because you've changed things very, very quickly. And I know we've spoken a lot about diet and food and fibers and stresses, and all of those are really important to address. But if things are very severe, you do need to go see your GP. But also, we can focus on lifestyle aspects, which are very simple to change, which can also be quite big factors in causing bloating. So when I talk about lifestyle factors, I'm talking about things like making sure you're doing regular exercise. And, you know, gentle exercising and stretching can help not only with gut motility, so moving things along your digestive system, but if you're stretching, then that can help diffuse trapped gas. It can help, you know, pass gas if you're outside. So I always say, you know, it's better out than in. Mm-hmm. And also exercise can help with mental health. So that will really help to strengthen that connection between the gut and the brain.
I think it reinforces once again that as human beings, as mammals, that we thrive off moving more, off relaxing and eating well and all the standard things I think we all know we should be doing a bit more of. But it can be so tough in modern society when perhaps your job entails a lot of sitting at a computer, at a desk. So I guess some tips for our listeners would be to just get up as much as you can, at least once an hour, or drink so much water that you need the toilet a lot more. And so you're getting up and then you're going for a stretch.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I have people say to me that they don't want to drink during the day because it means they're constantly going to the toilet. But if you're at home, absolutely. You know, getting up once an hour to go for a wee certainly isn't a bad thing.
And if you are at work, they should be allowed to go to the toilet more.
Yes, absolutely. And if you're that busy that you can't even go to the toilet, then you need to reassess the stress and the busyness of your job. I know that's so much easier said than done. But another thing I find with a lot of people is that, especially women, so we tend to wear, you know, high-waisted and quite tight-fitting clothing. And there's actually a term which has come out from the literature known as tight pant syndrome, which has been shown to actually worsen bloating. So we have this tight clothing that sits right on our waistline and kind of presses in to just above, kind of under our diaphragm. And this is actually something that really can trigger bloating. So especially if you're sat down for long periods of the day, I do try to say avoid wearing any tight fitting clothing, get the joggers on, And yeah, it's an excuse just to wear comfy clothes when you're around the house.
It's really interesting because I used to find when I wore a lot of kind of dresses with tights and things in the winter months, I really noticed it. I would always attribute wearing tights to having a poorer digestive system. There's something about just having that extra tight band around your stomach that really, well, this is anecdotal, of course, but I found that had an impact on me, Caitlin. So I'm sure.
There you go.
It's a thing, isn't it? It totally is a thing. And one in five people now have IBS. So it's really common, like we said before. I mean, why do so many people have it now, Caitlin? And if people are bloated a lot, does that mean they should be worried? Do they really need to get help straight away?
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So it is important to remember that a little bit of bloating is normal. So everyone farts up to about 20 times a day. Mm. And there can always be the odd time, you know, we've eaten something a bit dodgy, or if we're even feeling a bit under the weather. But it is, if these symptoms become more frequent and severe, then it's always worth getting things checked out. So the best starting point will be to keep a food and symptoms diary and go see your GP, because it's important to have other conditions like celiac disease and inflammatory bowel disease ruled out. And then your GP can refer you to a specialist or a dietitian if a diagnosis of IBS is confirmed.
And what exactly is a diagnosis of IBS? So what should people be looking out for that would indicate perhaps that they have it? Is it just bloating, or are there lots of other symptoms?
So IBS is a medical term used to describe a collection of different gut symptoms, and symptoms really do vary from one individual to another and can be a lot worse for some people than others. It is a very common condition. As you said, it affects around 1 in 5 adults. But there is a very specific diagnostic criteria for irritable bowel syndrome, something called the Rome-4 criteria. And an assessment of IBS should be considered if you have had any of the following symptoms for at least 6 months. So that would be abdominal pain or discomfort, bloating, or a change in bowel habits. Mm. But that alone doesn't equal a diagnosis of IBS, because IBS should only be considered if there is abdominal pain or discomfort that's either relieved by going to the toilet or associated kind of with a change in bowel habits, so more frequent bowel motions or less frequent. And then we also do see these accompanied with altered stool passage. So you might see straining or urgency or this feeling of incompleteness when you are opening your bowels. Mm. You might see abdominal bloating, yes, of course. You might also notice that your symptoms are particularly made worse by eating. And in a subset of people with irritable bowel syndrome, they also get the passage of mucus. So there are some reasons to consult your doctor for a referral for a specialist where you have possible symptoms of IBS. So for example, if you had any unintentional or unexplained weight loss, you saw any blood in your stool, there was a particular family history of bowel or ovarian cancer, or for anyone over the age of 60, if you have a change in bowel habit to looser or more frequent stools persisting for more than 6 weeks, then this is when you really need to go get things checked out.
Yeah, thank you. That's so helpful because it can be very overwhelming. I think it's a term that is thrown about quite a bit, to be honest, and I don't think people are aware. And I know that having my little boy at the moment has really opened my eyes to how disconnected to eating and our digestive symptoms we really are as human beings. I mean, he knows when he's full, knows when he's hungry. I can see him kind of arch a little bit when he's trying to do a fart or he's trying to do a poo. And it's like, it takes a lot of force as well. The muscles in our digestive system, because I can see it in his belly and feel it when he's really trying to push through. It's absolutely fascinating. And I think it's a shame that we're almost so ashamed to talk about it because, like you said, we all fart up to 20 times a day. But I guess it's just not something that in conversation you would kind of sit around the table and be like, oh, you know, I had a lot of farts today.
Exactly. Well, I'm so used to it. I will talk to poo and farting and toilet habits to anyone. Yeah. Meet my new neighbour, I'll be asking them. No, I'm joking. I don't really. But I'm so used to it. But I think, you know, it is a bit of a taboo subject, which thankfully because of it, places like Instagram is becoming less of a taboo subject because everyone does it. So it is really important to talk about these things and start to realise, you know, what is normal, what isn't normal, and when it's right to go get it checked out.
Exactly. And there's also other things that I think we need to clear up a little bit. Things like phrases like balancing hormones to impact the gut. And then let's talk about travelling after as well. But yeah, what are your thoughts on those types of things that are said?
Yes. So optimizing our gut health is key, but gut health is so important because our microbiome has many, many different functions. So the research has shown that it can aid the synthesis and regulation of hormones. It can facilitate the absorption of macronutrients and micronutrients. It has a really essential role in our immune system and, you know, everything plays together. There is some new and emerging research now looking at something called the estrobilome. I don't even know if I'm pronouncing that actually correctly, which I've read about is a collection of bacteria in the gut, which is capable of metabolizing and modulating the body's circulating estrogen levels.
Oh, wow.
And it's the bacteria in the gut and that estrobilome that affects estrogen levels, which in turn can impact things like our weight and our mood. But as with lots of areas to do with the gut microbiome, much more research is needed to really start to draw definite conclusions. What is also important to think about is our sex hormones, because they may influence the gut-brain axis, essentially by contributing to this visceral hypersensitivity we were talking about earlier. Perhaps things like motility, intestinal barrier function, and also things like our immunity. It's important to also acknowledge that there may be sex differences, between in our stress responses. So, for example, males may deal with stress differently to females, for example. Mm.
Sounds about right. I mean, I'm thinking about my husband and the way we have completely different digestive systems, the way we deal with things. And you touched on the immune system there, and that's something that we have discussed on other podcasts. But it's important to note that the majority of our immune system is really heavily dependent on the activity within our gut. Everything in our body is pretty much so interlinked. And as you said, Caitlin, we can't control that by wishing it and thinking it from our brain. We really need to look after it. And why is it then when we do travel or we go abroad that we often experience changes in our digestion? Because that's a question that we get a lot.
It starts sometimes if we're traveling abroad on an aeroplane. So if, for example, we have some gas production and gas sitting in our digestive system, then when we go up into an aeroplane, that gas inside our intestines can actually expand due to the pressure of the aeroplane, just as you might see things like food packets crisp packets expanding and your water bottles popping. The same sort of thing happens within our digestive system. So you may find that bloating is worse after traveling on an aeroplane. As well as that, if you're traveling across time zones, then obviously this has an impact on your circadian rhythm. And we do now know that our gut bacteria, they also have their own circadian rhythm.
Wow.
So if, so if you're traveling across time zones, then you're interfering with their circadian rhythm. And therefore, you know, our gut microbes, they're creatures of habit. So they love normal routine, and traveling can interfere with that. And obviously as well as, yes, exactly. And as well as all of that, when we tend to go on holiday or we tend to travel abroad, our food intake changes completely. So aeroplane food is lacking in fiber. When we get to wherever we're going, our normal dietary habits are probably out the window. We might be indulging a little bit more, focusing less on these plant-based foods, and therefore our fiber intake goes down. We might be drinking more alcohol, more caffeine. So many different factors can play into why our gut health changes when we travel.
Yeah, and I just find that it blows my mind. This is why I think everybody loves talking about gut health as well, is because it is so interesting. You have this whole living colony and of microorganisms living inside you, doing their own thing, liking the routine that you portray every day. You're the vessel, the body that carries them. And we all work harmoniously together. I find it completely mind-blowing. And this is why it upsets me a little bit that there is such a drive of pseudoscience and false information online when it comes to the gut, especially, you know, these bloating things that are out there. I mean, a lot of them can be positive, of course, to reassure people bloating is normal, but sometimes it can be so damaging, can't it? In fact, what can people do if we're going to get one bit of evidence-based advice from you to reduce bloating, not just in the moment, you know, but to prevent it happening a lot long term if it's the painful kind?
So as well as all of the diet and lifestyle factors I've already mentioned, so things like, you know, avoiding chewing gum, limiting intake of fruit juices, you know, having smaller meals throughout the day, avoiding tight-fitting clothing, making sure you're doing regular exercise, there is some really good evidence for the use of peppermint oil and peppermint oil capsules. So unlike many other herbal supplements, peppermint oil has been rigorously studied for its benefits in managing irritable bowel syndrome, bloating, and excess wind. So peppermint oil works because it's an antispasmodic, essentially meaning it relaxes the gut muscles. And this can be particularly helpful to alleviate bloating and alleviate trapped gas. So I recommend to my clients that they take one capsule, half an hour to an hour before mealtimes on an empty stomach. So it can help to relax the muscles before you eat a meal. However, this should not be a long-term solution. If you're taking peppermint oil capsules for more than 1 month and you still haven't got to the bottom of what's causing your bloating, then you really do need to seek some additional advice. Peppermint tea hasn't been as well researched because the peppermint is normally digested and broken down by your stomach acid before it can get to your intestine where it needs to work. However, I do have many clients say that drinking peppermint tea throughout the day, it really does help them. And of course, it's caffeine free. So I would encourage you to drink that if it helps.
In fact, could you touch on caffeine as well, Caitlin, the impact caffeine perhaps may have? Because that was a question from one of our listeners as well.
Yeah, so caffeine is a stimulant and can aggravate the lining of the intestinal wall. So if you're suffering from irritable bowel syndrome symptoms, then limiting or reducing your caffeine intake is certainly recommended. So in terms of caffeine limits, for most adults in the UK, a maximum of 400 milligrams of caffeine is deemed safe. And if you're pregnant or breastfeeding, that reduces down to 200 milligrams a day. In terms of what that looks like, I would say a maximum of 2 cups of caffeinated coffee a day, a maximum of 3 cups of caffeinated tea a day. Anything on top of that should be decaffeinated.
Yeah, no, such good advice. It's so interesting, like you said, about the tea and the actual capsule and that type of information. And I guess different times of the month for women may have a role. And that's a question we have from Amy, who wrote in, and she said, why do I always get bloated around the time I'm on my period?
That's a really good question. And I'm so glad she's asked that, because something I did want to touch on, because I often do find with female clients that they report a worsening of their gut symptoms around or during their period. And in particular, it's common to experience diarrhea and bloating during your period. This is because our uterus produces a chemical called prostaglandin, which causes contractions to help the uterus shed its lining. Now, prostaglandin can get into the bloodstream, making its way to our intestines, also causing them to contract as well. So this causes abdominal pain and therefore can cause diarrhea. And prostaglandins also reduce the absorption rate of food in the intestines. So that means food travels faster through the colon and can then also cause diarrhea.
Yeah, that's so interesting. I think women do have a tough time, don't they, Caitlin?
We do indeed. But it's all about trying to understand what's going on inside your body, because knowledge is power. So when I see a lot of clients, the reason they come to see us is because they really have no clue as to what could be causing their symptoms. When we look at improving gut health, it's about understanding what's going on inside your body and learning and understanding how to manage those symptoms as best as you can. And then that really can be very reassuring to a lot of people.
Yeah, exactly. 100%. This question had to come up. So I don't know how to say it, 'cause I think it's an Irish name, Aileen or Eileen. Beautiful name. She said, sometimes I get flare ups. Should I be taking probiotics? We need to touch on probiotics.
So probiotics, put simply, are beneficial bacteria which we can take directly into our guts. Now, a normal healthy person doesn't need to take a probiotic. However, if there is a particular symptom you are trying to manage, then there may be a probiotic to take that you can take to try and help manage things. Now, probiotics should certainly not be the first line or the first thing you reach to try and improve your gut symptoms. It's really important to address those dietary factors, the lifestyle factors, everything that we've been talking about during the episode. But if there are still some niggling problems, then you can look to see if there is an appropriate probiotic to take. The best way to go about doing that is having a look on a website called the US Probiotic Guide. And on there, you need to have a look to see if there's been a probiotic which has been studied to help with your particular symptom. So there's millions and trillions of different strains of probiotic bacteria. So it's important you take the right strain to help with your symptom. Once you've seen on this guide that there might be a probiotic on the market that you can take, then you need to make sure you're taking the right dose, you're taking it at the right time of day, you're taking it with or without food, so on an empty stomach or a full stomach, and for how long you need to take it. But I do always say, take a probiotic for 4 weeks. If after 4 weeks you really haven't noticed any change in your symptoms, then there's no point wasting your money and continuing to take the product.
Yeah, some of them are so expensive, and I think they're marketed in such a clever way that make people think that they're going to need them all year round, whereas actually the reality is that you know, that certain strains, like you said, are only going to be effective for certain types of moments in time. It's not going to be something that's going to help forever and always. Question from Ola. Ola has said, I think I've got a gluten intolerance. It always flares up when I eat carbs. Does this sound likely?
Possibly, yes. But the first step would be to go see your GP just to make sure that they can rule out celiac disease. Once that had been ruled out, then yes, there are a subset of people who may have an intolerance to gluten. If you do feel as gluten may be the problem, then the simple thing to do would be to restrict it from your diet for 4 weeks. If things do improve, however, then it is super important to reintroduce gluten to confirm that it's definitely the culprit. If after excluding gluten for 4 weeks, you really notice no difference whatsoever, then it's even more important to reintroduce it back into your diet, because by restricting large food groups like gluten for no reason, you could actually put your risk at other nutritional deficiencies.
So be sure. Right, Caitlin, we're going to move on to our fact or fiction round. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay, here we go. Immunity is dependent upon our gut.
Oh, well, yes, it plays a big role. So, fact.
Love it. Here we go. Water helps to reduce bloating.
Oh, well, oh, these are hard ones. Well, yeah. Fact, yes. Because if you're not drinking enough water, then it's likely you could become constipated. And if you're constipated, then that's going to cause bloating. So, yeah, fact.
Brilliant. Being bloated isn't a sign of anything serious.
Sorry, I'm not very good at answering yes on the fact or fiction for these, am I? Can I say faction? So if it's a small amount of bloating after a meal, then that's completely normal. As we've said during this episode, if it's constant, continuous, severe in nature, then please do get it checked out because it's just important to rule out anything more sinister.
Exactly. You'll gain weight if you get bloated.
Fiction.
Diet foods are harder to digest.
Oh, I'm going to say fact only because diet foods are the foods which often contain these artificial sweeteners, these polyols, and as we've mentioned, these can really trigger bloating in some people. So, yeah.
Perfect. Being bloated means you have excess gas.
Fiction. Testing myself there. Fiction.
Sitting down a lot can increase chances of bloating.
I'm going to say fact, just because of the sedentary lifestyle, if we're not exercising, if we're not doing any movement, if we're wearing these tight high-waisted clothing, then yes.
There we go. FODMAP diets cure bloating.
Fiction.
Great. Smoking can make you more prone to bloating.
Oh, that's a good question. I'm going to say fact. Just because we know smoking isn't good for our overall health, and there is research to show that smoking can decrease the diversity of our gut bacteria, so therefore could be linked to poorer gut health, which might be triggering your bloating.
Amazing. The more overweight you are, the more you bloat.
Fiction.
Brilliant. Caitlin, that was a really good round. They were not easy questions.
Thank you so much.
I think after that fact or fiction round, I'm going to wrap this episode up today and we're going to go into our food for thoughts. And I love doing this bit because I'm really, first of all, proud to have Caitlin in the Retrition Clinic because, as you've heard, her knowledge is really quite something. And she's very honest and open about the fact that gut health is complex. Bloating can be complex. It's not just a straightforward black and white thing. Most of us get it. It can often happen, you know, after a big weekend or a large meal. But for some people, it really is something a lot more than just the occasional inconvenience and should be taken seriously. You know, your stomach can expand up to 5 times, isn't it? Your normal size. So, you know, I think it's important to know that our body is quite remarkable and incredible. But as you've heard today, the way we live our life will impact our gut health and will impact how we bloat and all sorts of things. At least there's some changes we can do there. Caitlin, if you have a lovely take-home message for our listeners today, a food for thought, what would that be?
My food for thought would probably be that the foods you choose to put in your body can have an enormous impact on your digestive health and well-being. But nutrition isn't the only story. So you do need to consider all aspects of your lifestyle to truly start to get your digestion back on track. Now, reaching better digestive health is also a highly individualized process. So there is no one size fits all solution. And you need to try different approaches to see which eases symptoms for you and what works for you may not work for someone else.
Exactly. Perfect. Caitlin, thank you. If you could let our listeners know where to go to find out more about you.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. Yes, if anyone wants to find out more about me, they can find me on Instagram at The Mission Dietitian or on my website, which is www.caitlincolucci.com.
Perfect. And of course, if anyone wants to book in to see Caitlin, she's at the Retrition Clinic as well. And I think there was actually so much we could have covered in that episode, but I think this has been so helpful for everyone, Caitlin. So thank you so much for coming on Food for Thought.
Thank you so much for having me.
If you enjoyed this episode, you'll absolutely love what's coming next week. So make sure that you click subscribe to be the first to hear it. And if you have the time to, we'd really appreciate it if you could leave a review so that we can reach higher highs in the charts. And hopefully that will help us reach more and more people. For more information about my Retrition Clinic, the books, healthy recipes, and so much more, please do visit retrition.com. And you can follow me on social media at Retrition on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.